state authorities in Ohio have been accused of cruelty and inhumanity after they used an experimental lethal cocktail to execute a convicted murderer. It took more than 15 minutes for the man to suffocate to death. You might find what you're about to hear upsetting. Here's Dennis McGuire's son describing his father's final moments.
Yesterday I watched the state of Ohio kill my dad. I witnessed his execution along with my wife and my sister. It is difficult for me to talk about what happened. Shortly after the warden buttoned his jacket to signal the start of the execution, my dad began gasping and struggling to breathe. I watched his stomach heave. I watched him try to sit up against the straps on the gurney. I watched him repeatedly clench his fist. It appeared to me he was fighting for his life, but suffocating. The agony and terror of watching my dad suffocate to death lasted more than 19 minutes. It was the most awful moment in my life to witness my dad's execution. No one should die the way my dad did, no matter the circumstances.
The commentators, Charlie Wolfe and Kate Smurthwaite, with me now. Charlie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Stephen.
So this man who was executed, he killed a pregnant woman, Charlie.
He raped and killed.
The way he was killed by the state, is that on?
Well, I don't think it was as bad as people perceive, to be fair. I had that is part of the natural process of death, and I know that because I lost a friend to cancer about 6 months ago, and I had a long chat with his brother who was there, and he described that exact situation of heaving chest and guttural sounds and gasping for breath. That's part of the natural process. I can also give you one other...
Lasted 15 minutes.
Well, a friend went for several hours. You know, listen, we should do all we can to make sure executions are speedy and go as quickly as possible, but I don't think I'm that worried about this case. I can also tell you the guy was on a drug called midazolam. I've been on midazolam. He didn't remember anything. I can tell you that.
Well, he'd not be remembering it now because he's
dead. But if he told the tale, he wouldn't be remembering it.
Kit?
Well, I mean, you know me, Stephen. I'm against the death penalty in the first place. I don't think that we achieve anything by saying you mustn't murder people, and so if you do, we're going to murder you. You know, there is a sensible, logical, and in fact cheaper alternative, which is life imprisonment, which is to say we're going to lock people up. And I think that's the only fair thing to do as well, because how many times do we convict someone of murder and then go, actually, there might have been extenuating circumstances, actually, that the witness might have been lying, actually, somebody else has confessed to this. We're never 100% sure that the conclusion we've reached is definitely the right one and this kind of stuff. So I think it's obvious all around the world, countries over the years have abandoned the death penalty and gone, you know what, this isn't the right solution. And especially when we hear about it not being done very effectively, not being done quickly, not being done painlessly, it's obvious that this isn't the solution to the situation. There are very few countries around the world that insist on retaining the death penalty. Amnesty International thinks it's a bad idea, and it's really about time that America, of all places, caught up with that,
story. Kate, you know, there's a thing called self-determination, and states have a right to determine how they go forth. Some states have executions, some don't in the United States.
Right, and
This is all a red herring here, because you haven't really discussed what this man's gone through or not gone through. Because you're not interested, you have an ideological concern that you want to get rid of the death penalty. You're welcome to it. But, you know, let's discuss the issue. Now, is there a better...
All right, well, look...
Well, but that is the issue. You can't discuss the death penalty without discussing
Okay,
tell you what, we'll pick this up. Stay there. Stay both of you there. We'll pick this up after the 10 o'clock news. We're just in the middle of talking about this execution that happened in Ohio, of a man who took 15 minutes to suffocate to death. Now, he was executed because he raped and murdered a pregnant lady. Sunday Sequence with William Crawley was speaking to Father Lawrence Hummer, the Catholic priest who witnessed the death.
I had been told that the normal, quote-unquote, time that an inmate is declared dead is about 5 minutes. And this one, as I say, took 26, so that's much lengthier, and it was horrendous to watch because you were helpless to be able to do anything for a man, And no matter who the human being is, your compassion as a human being is on trial there. And again, I've seen many people die, and it's usually something that has a quiet peace to it when somebody simply breathes out and doesn't breathe back in. But even with Dennis, the end of his whole process after gasping audibly for 11 minutes, at the end of that time, he was making this, if you imagine a fish lying on the shore trying to get its last breath, and it kind of goes with his mouth, and you can imagine what Dennis looked like at the end. He was still sort of puffing for air and obviously wasn't getting any at that point. And so that too will probably stay with me.
I guess Charlie Wolfe and Kate Smoothwaite, Charlie, let's start with you. That's the kind of horrible death that some people would believe is befitting of a rapist and a murderer.
Well, I don't know that it has to be befitting. I think the people who suffered here actually weren't so much Dennis McGuire, but unfortunately his son, family, and the priest and the witnesses. You know, watching someone die at an execution, I'm sure, is not an easy process. But I don't think this has violated the Eighth Amendment on cruel and unusual punishment, because there was no intent for cruel and unusual punishment. I would like to hear what an autopsy had to say, or any sort of post-mortem had to say. But I think, you know, listening to Kate just before the news, with due respect, I just heard a lot of ideological talking points, you know, things about do we know he really did it or not. We do know.
That's not what I said at all, actually, Charlie. I was very clear not to hang it specifically on that point. So not listening to Kate is, in fact, what you've been doing.
Well, you can better explain yourself. But again, you gave a long litany of anti-death penalty rhetoric, and again, you're entitled to it, but I don't think that was the case here, and I don't think this is a case for banning the death penalty.
Well, the situation is, like, first of all, the case for abolishing the death penalty, you know, is simple and straightforward. It really has nothing to do with individual cases. It's just that, you know, should we as the state respond to crimes that we find horrifying by committing yet more of those crimes? And the answer is obviously no. You know, the measure of us as a society, surely, is how we treat, you know, the least among us. You know, if we turn around and say we're just going to be sort of vengeful, or what's that, you stabbed someone, we're going to stab you, that's not us as a society doing justice. That's just us wreaking revenge on people we're angry with.
Yes,
you're quite right that there is, in this case, you know, no issue around his guilt. But my point was not so much about the issue around his guilt. We also don't know about the circumstances in which the crime was committed. We never know. We could find out years later that somebody had been suffering from a mental disorder. We could find out years later that somebody had some sort of, physical thing wrong with them. They had a brain tumor that was pushing on their, you know, the part of their brain that leads to aggression.
We never know with 100% certainty what is going on at the time.
And ultimately, we also, as a society, why are we trying to wreak revenge? Surely what we want to do is protect the public, punish criminals, and rehabilitate those who've committed crimes, so that eventually they can contribute to our society, whether that's from prison or from being released again.
I think Kate has a misunderstanding of what the process is about. It's not seeking revenge or vengeance. What it is, though, is balancing the scales of justice. And as I've argued before...
But how does it balance...
Hold on, Kate. Let's let him finish.
There are some crimes that are heinous enough that the scales of justice must balance. And I would hope that if, God forbid, someone did that to my wife or child, I would want to know that the state values their life that much, that the only way to balance those scales would be through an execution. I don't think it should happen to everybody who murders someone or for every circumstance, but there are certain cases where that should be in the arsenal of justice, is the ability to balance those scales.
Let's see what we think at home this morning. Harry's in Belfast. Morning, Harry.
Hi, Stephen.
What are your thoughts?
Stephen, well, first of all, let me say first up, I'm against the death penalty, but having said that, if a country like America wants to carry it out, surely it's possible to find a more humane and quick way of doing it.
Well, of course, they were experimenting with these drugs. I'll tell you why. They actually have run out of the drug that they usually use for executions because the manufacturer took that drug off supply. So this was a new drug they were trying.
Could I just finish the point I was going to make? For as long as I can remember, you know, if people have a sick cat or a sick dog, it's been perfectly possible for veterinarians to put them down. We use that term in a humane and you know, pain-free fashion. I'm absolutely amazed that a developed country like America that can put a man on the moon cannot come up with a dignified, you know, pain-free, quick method of execution. You read these absolute horror stories about electric chairs and gas chambers, you know, and the appalling brutality of all these things. Why can a country like America, with all their scientists and technology, not come up with a quick, simple, painless, quick way of putting these criminals to death if that's what they decide to do?
And Billy and Ken Gormley. Morning, Billy.
Yes, I was absolutely horrified to listen to the brutal rape and murder of this poor woman. I'm quite sure her experience lasted more than 20 or 25 minutes with this horrible man. And I have definitely no sympathy for a man who carried out such a foul deed on an innocent woman.
So you believe in an eye for an eye, Billy?
Well, I was just reading, Stephen, the book of Revelations, the last chapter but one, and it tells you there about murderers, that there's no place in heaven for them. So where are they today?
And Roy and Antrim. Morning, Roy.
This here, but you're speaking about there. If you were in one of these Arab countries, they would end up cutting your head off or hanging you. And I think this man deserved everything that he could get, because I'm sure that woman lay there in agony for long enough too as well. And I do not agree with capital punishment, but I agree.
Sounds like you do. Sounds like you do.
Yes, well, I do concern a man more than a pregnant woman. Yes, I agree. That's exactly two people he has murdered, not one.
Listen to the spread of calls, Kate Smurthwaite. Very little sympathy.
Well, but the issue is not whether or not we feel sympathy. Of course we don't feel sympathy for someone who's committed a brutal rape and murder. The question is this the right way to punish someone by turning around and then, as a state, essentially committing that same crime? And you know, in my view, and indeed that of Amnesty International and lots of human rights organisations around the world, is that there is a better alternative, which is life imprisonment, where you say, OK, we think this is the worst possible crime that, you know, that's on our list. There, you know, we're going to go for the maximum punishment, so you will spend the rest of your life in prison. And you know, and then at that time we have the option to make later choices about whether somebody about whether we've looked at the case again and thought differently about it. But also, you know, frankly, it's cheaper, it's a more sensible way of looking at things, and we don't run the risk of the hurt caused to the family and all of those people from watching somebody struggle and suffer. And we also don't run the risk of things going wrong and the execution not being done properly, which sadly has happened far too many times, and evidently again on this occasion.
Actually, it's interesting to note, Stephen, that many times when people talk about getting rid of the death penalty, not Kate, but when they talk about staying the rest of their lives in jail, usually the term rot in jail is said. So I don't think that spending a lifetime in jail is necessarily such a great alternative. And also, it should be noted.
We're not suggesting it is. We're not giving these people a great alternative. We're giving them a just punishment, and we're giving them a punishment that deliberately avoids the state committing the same crime that they've committed. Because how do we teach our children that this is wrong?
The state is not committing the crime.
An
execution is not a murder. But let me just point out one other
thing. It is.
Hold on. Let me finish the point I was going to make. It's interesting to note there's been studies done that there's a greater chance of someone innocent of a crime dying in prison through a life sentence than through execution, because when it's a capital crime, it goes into what's known as a form of what they call super justice. In other words, there are mandatory appeals, and when a man's life is on the line, it's taken very seriously. When it's a life sentence, there's a greater chance that an innocent man will be convicted.
But Charlie, that's an argument for increasing prisoners' rights and making sure that everybody convicted of any crime, regardless of their sentence, has the right to appeal. And actually, it's incredibly prescient right now in the UK, because we're seeing these cuts to legal aid, and one of the groups that are no longer going to have the right to access legal aid is people who are in prison who've been convicted. So you're absolutely right that we must make sure that everybody who's been convicted of a crime has the right to appeal that and to appeal their treatment and to appeal their sentencing and to appeal all aspects of it, because we know that sometimes there are miscarriages of justice, and we know that some people, you know, get punished for the wrong thing and there can be misunderstandings. Of course people have to have those rights, and they're being eroded right now.
Okay, so Lindsay's in Temple Patrick. Morning, Lindsay.
It doesn't justify capital punishment.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
Stephen, I'm just thinking to myself, even if something happened to, God forbid, my own family, I, even though my emotional side of my thinking would be I would want to go out and kill that person, I could not personally do that myself. So they're leaving that to someone else to commit another murder. So the people who are actually carrying out these executions...
It's a hell of a deterrent, is it not?
Pardon?
It's a hell of a deterrent, is it not?
A deterrent?
Yeah.
There have been too many mistakes made in the past, Stephen. It's draconian. It's draconian. When was the last hanging in Northern Ireland? These people who, the people, the hangmen, how can they go home and live with themselves when they've actually committed another murder?
George and Ballymena. Morning, George.
Morning, Stephen. I don't want to get involved in the debate about whether it's right or wrong. That's really for the Americans to decide, not for us. But I listened to the interview yesterday morning with the priest that was involved in this case, and I thought to myself, how lucky is that guy that he was able to go to confession to that priest, not once but quite a number of times, to get himself ready to meet his maker before he was executed. Unlike that poor woman that I would imagine that didn't have any chance to get herself made right with God before she met her maker. And I thought, you know, all this hoo-ha about him being executed, at the end of the day, he had a better chance than maybe you or I or a whole lot of other people may have who are killed in car crashes.
Oh, don't be saying that.
Fall at their work, killed at their work.
Don't be saying that.
Crashes and all the rest of it. He had at least an opportunity to get himself right with God as far as he could before he was executed. That's my comment.